Saddam Hussein being in control of Iraq for so long, many of us assumed that it was because he was, controlling oil or had nuclear weapons. But in fact, he had something of a much greater asset, which was he controlled access to the temples that housed the history of humanity's origins, potentially the secrets of literally what we see in the film on Sci-Fi Channel, Stargates and stuff like that.
Right. And if Saddam realized what he had, do you believe that Saddam knew what he had?
Based on the info that came out of Iraq, what basically went down was there were a series of events. One of them was basically like an Iraqi Roswell. Something happened in 1998 where even on CNN, there was a triangle formation of lights that appeared over Baghdad, and CNN's night vision video cameras caught this on tape. And as this thing was slowly moving around the city, most of the people that are ufologists realized the connection that this looked just like what we saw in the Phoenix lights.
Right.
And have even been having a resurgence of that lately for whatever reason. So it's very possible that yes, maybe something crashed UFO-wise in Iraq that Saddam got his hands on, and we were more fearful of him reverse engineering the technology like we're doing, and that was the threat to make us need to go in there today.
a second time, you mean?
That's correct.
The first Persian Gulf War, you're not alleging was anything about that, but second one, perhaps because we needed to go back in and recover ancient artifacts or modern artifacts which would have empowered Saddam in a way which we couldn't afford to let him become.
That's right. The only tie-in I would say to the first intrusion to Iraq was this, is that the reason why we didn't get him then, rumors were then, was that he was hiding out in some of these ziggurat pyramids that, again, just the wealth of historical of human information of our origins, it was just not something we could bomb.
Now, have you been to Iraq yet?
I have not.
Okay. Not many people have.
But I have a good story for that, though. So.
Okay, well, I want to hear that. Not many people have, but are you making plans to try to get there? Because obviously so much of your work is focused there that I would be curious to talk to you both before and after a visit and your own tour of these ancient sites and these museums.
The beauty of what the Sumerian culture has left us, which, again, we're going to get into, is that it's spread out into all the other various cultures that we have. So I don't necessarily need to go to Iraq to view and see Sumerian artifacts or understand our heritage. In fact, a great portion of the excavations that were done in the early 1900s were done by the British Museum. So most of the knowledge that we have from ancient Sumer is stored and cataloged in museums around the world, like in Turkey and in East Berlin and in the British Museum. But the fun thing with the artifacts that we have there now is that it's very possible that Saddam is aware of the importance of this heritage and of the information left to the Sumerians by, let's just call it, their living gods. Like in the Bible, it says there were once giants upon the earth.
Right.
Well, many of the similarities and fundamental aspects of what the Sumerians wrote down and left us in the form of stone tablets with text on them and actual pictogram pictures describing events to accompany these texts, many of these parallel the biblical tales that we are renowned in English and in Hebrew, but many of these tales can be found as a Sumerian stone counterpart as the original tale, some of these being the Noah's Ark tale and Adam and Eve. We'll get into some of these and show that these artifacts actually exist. So it's very possible Saddam was aware of this, and the information bequeathed to that this ancient culture has just unbelievable wealths of information
right.
that he might be taking advantage of.
And relevance to this day. Let me touch on something that came up, though, when we were doing some open lines, that perhaps the word giant, I mean, can we not say that, similar to the way some biblical scholars would argue, that, you know, when somebody's age in the Bible is described as being 900 years old, it was a metaphoric way of saying this person was great and had a huge impact. It was as though they had lived, 900 years, is what some scholars would say that number signifies, that it's a numerological reference more than it is to be taken in sort of a chronological idea of age. And so is it is it possible, if that is true or informative, that when we use the word giant, that we could be using it like we do now when we say he was a giant of industry? We don't mean he actually turned into 12 feet tall, you know, CEO, but he was a he had that big of an impact. Is that possible?
Well, I think from my point of view, based on when we talk about the Sumerian understandings of their gods, and again, you know, the English version is just a more consolidated version of what the Sumerians said. They said they lived amongst their living gods, have left us many pictograms, images, and text descriptions, which, for all case and points, yes, they are actually larger than us. They are genetically better than us. They have a more perfect physique. The females are more, you know, curvy, and the males are more aesthetic as far as, you know, muscular. So a lot of the things as far as the similarities, you know, again, in the Bible it says God made us in his image and after his likeness. So, you know.
We only have to go back 60 years.
Yes.
To Japan, to a culture that believed that they were living with a living God, that the emperor was a God-like figure and was divine, and that was a, you know, as we know by history, a point of contention between the U.S. and Japan. It was part of the terms of their surrender, was that we got to, there had to be a reduction in the status of the emperor from being a divine figure to being just an earthly leader. And that, I think that that's, Is that informative of this, though, that not even, I mean, there's probably some cultures to this day that believe that they are living with their gods, too.
Well, you know, Ian, the coincidence there is that I personally think, through my own research and analyzing all these ancient structures and pyramids and monuments, it seems to be that the megalithic monuments that are left to us from these cultures were a place where man and God came together to meet. Now, we don't have those today, and so people look at these stories in the Bible, or we're going to discuss the Anunnaki, the ancient Sumerian gods, those who from heaven come to earth.
Right.
People say this is mythology. Somewhere along the line, this is a culture just kind of, you know, using stone tools and living in clay huts and are making up mythological tales for their gods. I say in another light that, well, if you're living in stone hut or living in clay huts and using stone tools, you're not going to understand what an extraterrestrial is or what space engineering or technology like that is.
Right.
So you would say, wow, this being or this man coming down to Earth in some type of flying vehicle, I can only attribute flight to what I see as like birds, so I give it wings. So a lot of the things that we see in my interpretation of when we depict angels, or as we're going to discuss, the Anunnaki, the Sumerian gods,
right,
look just like what we see in the Bible, you know, men and women with wings, they're depicting that they had the power of flight. So it's a very interesting coincidence in the stuff that they've written down and left us. When you say, yes, are they living gods today? I think what possibly happened is, at a time when man did live amongst his living gods, we built these awesome temples and worship places where we went and actually conversed with them or took down sacred information from them. But at some point in our past, they left. The gods, let's just call them the gods,
right,
left. And so the high priests and the people in charge of the now established religions are panicking. Oh, my God, the gods have left. How do we maintain order and worship?
Sure.
So that's where all the statues and things come in, and there's this whole mix-up of why today we still have temples and churches, and they say don't practice false idols and gods, because it's this whole convoluted information, which for myself, I have transgressed to, where did this come from? Where did these stories first show up?